The Tom Woods Show, episode 2337.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. As the academic year winds down, it's time to start thinking about what you're going to do in the fall. And of course, I highly recommend the self-taught K through 12 Ron Paul curriculum. Not only will your kids get the real story about everything, but they'll also learn the kinds of practical things that they won't learn in the traditional school. For instance, how to be an effective public speaker, how to manage money, and how to run your own home business. And of course, when they reach the high school grades, they will be learning Western civilization and U.S. government from old Tom Woods here. But here's the most important thing. If you're going to join, make sure you join through my link, because only through my link do you get $160 worth of free bonuses. My link is ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. Orrin McIntyre is back with us today. He has a great Substack. I recommend, I'll link to it on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2337. He also hosts the Orrin McIntyre Show. He's with The Blaze, and I wanted to talk to him. First of all, his Twitter feed is as valuable as anything I consult. I feel like he's, you know, in a way, did you ever read Joe Sobran when you were younger?
No, sorry.
But do you know him?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Listen, when we finish, I'm going to tell you all about him. He was one of the greats. Bill Buckley kicked him out of National Review, and he was one of the best writers you could imagine. He would capture the very essence of exactly what you were thinking. And as soon as he had done it, you realize, well, now I can't ever put it quite that way because now Joe has said it. I feel that way about you. I read your analysis and I think that is exactly what in inchoate form was tumbling around in my brain and you gave it verbal expression. So anyway, I'll talk to you about Joe Sobran later. What matters today is I have a few things current event related on my mind that I wanted to get your opinions on. So let's start with, if you wouldn't mind, the issue of Trump and DeSantis. Now, I guess we all figured that it was highly likely that both of these guys would run for 2024. But I suppose we probably would have expected that Trump would attack DeSantis because that's his style. But I guess what I didn't expect was that the two camps would be so hostile toward each other. I would have thought that in my naivete, I guess I would have thought the two camps would think, well, we have two candidates here that are both giving expression to more or less the same set of ideas, and they each bring different strengths and weaknesses and may the best man win. It hasn't turned out that way. Why not?
Yeah, you wish that everybody would work together, that everyone could understand there's a common enemy and that whatever we're dealing with here is far more important than kind of the territory that these two groups want to fight over. But you can kind of understand what's happening here. Obviously, Trump is kind of an alpha guy. He's not going to let anyone else kind of get in his way. He's going to attack everybody. That's how he won the initial primary. You know, he went after Ted Cruz. He went after Marco Rubio. He went after all these people and he kind of destroyed them on a personal level. And this is one of the reasons I didn't want DeSantis to get in here. I respect DeSantis. I think he's a great governor. I live in Florida. I benefit directly from the excellence of his governance. So I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, DeSantis is a plant or DeSantis is controlled opposition. I don't think that's the case. I think he's a very promising guy. But he's running into a buzzsaw that is Donald Trump. And if there's one thing Donald Trump can do, it's just destroy opponents who come at him as kind of straight-laced. Now, Ron DeSantis is willing to push in a lot of directions. The other people, sometimes even Trump, aren't willing to push. And so he deserves a lot of credit in that area. But when you come to a primary season where it becomes a slugfest, especially one of kind of personal insults, Trump is just going to win this every time. And the unfortunate truth is that both these sides have operatives and coalitions behind them that need that particular candidate to win. Obviously, Trump's coalition is built up of a lot of MAGA people, a lot of people who otherwise were not included in the mainstream Republican Party, the mainstream conservative apparatus, and they only gained prominence by joining an outsider like Trump and basically backing him no matter what. And they obviously want him to be back in control so that they can kind of be in that position. Then there are a lot of people who were in the conservative establishment and hated seeing Trump step in, and they understand that they're never going back to like a Mitt Romney figure, but they figure that DeSantis is Trumpy enough, but still like straight-laced enough to where they can control or they can mediate him. And so they want to see him in charge because that allows the adults to get back into the room. And so these people have gotten really nasty towards each other almost immediately because there's kind of an existential crisis happening inside the Republican operative class over who's going to run this thing.
And so this is a bit of a double-edged sword for DeSantis because on the one hand, he gets the resources and the support of this particular wing, let's say. But on the other hand, the fact that he's getting it is fodder for the Trump people to say, you see, if he were any good, how could he possibly be attracting the support of these scummy people? And so it's hard for him to balance. Not to mention, no matter what your opinion on Trump is in his various qualities, whether he's an effective leader, whether you like his style, let's say when he used to tweet on Twitter, he seems to exude a genuine warmth toward other people that long before he had political ambitions, his employees would comment on, people would always say this. He didn't come across like the aloof rich guy that so many people do. Whereas the thing with DeSantis is, even though I think he does and says so many of the right things, especially at press conferences, he hits them right between the eyes. He knows all the data. They're not going to intimidate him or knock him off message. At the same time, I still feel like in those press conferences and in his interactions with ordinary voters, he just comes off as wooden. Is that just me?
No, it's not. I think it's been noticed by a lot of people. Look, again, I have nothing but good things to say about Ron DeSantis. I am a Ron DeSantis fan, but it's just undeniable that he does not have this level of charisma that Donald Trump has and this ability to connect with people. And a lot of pundits love to knock the base for this. They say, oh, how could you not care about the execution of policy? How could you not care about the minutia of different stuff? It's like, look, guys, you are never going to get the vast majority of voters to care more about minutiae of policy than they will about charisma. That's just how this stuff works. And if you don't understand that, you should really not hold a job in politics because you're really bad at it. But we hear this over and over again. Look, I'm with the people who say Trump did not execute policy correctly. He was disastrous in certain areas. Some areas he was great in, but some areas he was not. And the fact that he was not able to staff up and not able to control the people around him, these are serious black marks against him. These are all relevant critiques of Trump. But at the end of the day, the people want somebody who feels like a leader, feels like they connect with them, feels like they are on their side, attacking the press, destroying them, embarrassing them. Look what happened to the response after that town hall, that CNN town hall. Trump flourished in that environment because it's exactly where he wants to be, slaying the press for the amusement of the base. That's what he's really good at. And again, that's why I felt like DeSantis stepping into this race was always a mistake. Not because he's not competent. He's probably more competent than Trump. He probably would be, at the end of the day, a better executive strictly. But that's not the only role that a president serves, especially one in this particular scenario where Republicans and other people who oppose the woke left feel like they really have their backs up against the wall in every moment. And you just have to understand the moment you're in.
There are things Trump has said that he would do if reelected, like I'll release all the rest of the papers regarding the JFK assassination, or I'll pardon this guy or that guy or whatever. All things he could have done the first time. And I am inclined to go with what his first instincts were. That's probably what you're likely to see the second time. If he really felt strongly about these things, he would have done them then. And I feel like one of the major, major things that it's hard for anybody to overlook about Trump, as you say, it's not just that he couldn't control the people around him, it's that he couldn't even be bothered to inform himself as to who the people who weren't his mortal enemies were. Like, he couldn't even be bothered to find out who a sensible batch of candidates for him to draw from would be. And why do we think that would improve? That's the key thing, is your personnel. Not only does he not know the relevant people to choose from, he apparently doesn't even know which people to ask about to find out who those people would be. Do we have any reason to think that's gotten better?
I've talked to some people. I've interviewed Andrew Kloster on my program. And so I'm familiar with some of the guys who are in the Trump White House or in the Trump administration and connected to staffing and those kind of things. And it is clear that they understand some of the problems. They understand the mistakes that were made. Many of them did not join until later in and didn't have the opportunity to fix the things that they wanted to fix because of the relatively short time they were able to serve. And they do, in their defense, have a plan for next time. Like, they are already spooling up things like the schedule, if I believe it, the terminology is, to clean out bureaucracies and stuff. So it's not like no progress has been made. I think there would be some improvements when it comes to restaffing a Trump White House and putting things on course. But I think the real problem here is assuming that we have a one election problem on our hands, that we have a one presidential term problem on our hands. What we really have is a complete system failure and a political movement that has a bench that is just, you know, an inch deep. And I think it's far more valuable in a situation like that to acquire power and develop political talent at a regional level than it is to try to jam your most competent person into the White House as soon as possible, hoping that that person just steps in and completely changes the entire Washington machine. I think DeSantis, again, is a very capable guy, but I just don't think that he's going to clean out the entire deep state the minute he sits down, especially because I don't feel like he's ready to take on some of the most difficult challenges that we have. Again, he might get there. He might be that guy, but I'm just not sure he's that guy now. And if you're in a situation where you need to build that talent over time, then I think it's far better to leave him in a position like the governorship, where he's already shown a very clear ability to lead, a very clear ability to be effective, a very clear ability to build the kind of coalition he needs, so that when his next time came around, when the next election came around, he'd have a clear shot, be a clear front runner, and already have everything he needs behind him to make that happen. Obviously, it seems like people whispered in his ear too much. That's not going to be the case, but that would have been my advice.
I'm talking tomorrow to Paul Gottfried, and he's been around a long time. He has an article, I sent it to you, in the American Conservative on the worst case scenario. Now, Paul tends to be on the pessimistic side, so let's just bear that in mind. He's a pessimist by nature. But what he's saying is, and maybe the midterms might have driven this point home, but we normal people think, you look at the Biden administration and the incompetence, the craziness, the weirdness, all of it, you think nobody can support that. I mean, at least, okay, maybe some hangers on, but surely the average American has to see how feckless, well, no, feckless is actually the wrong, that's, I withdraw that word. He's been very effective at doing a lot of very bad things, or very bad at doing anything good that he might even pretend to be trying to do. So you think, well, there's no way this guy can get reelected. But what Paul is trying to say is, it looks like there's 40% of the electorate that's going to go for Biden no matter what. Doesn't matter how bad it is, they're going to go for him no matter what. So don't come to the conclusion that any reasonable person has to see that the coalition that elected Biden is a clown show and is at odds with everything you hold dear. That does not resonate with a solid, solid 40% of the electorate. And then he said, moreover, Michelle Obama, for the third straight year, has been voted the, can you believe this, the most admired woman in America. Michelle Obama, most admired woman in America. If they nominated her, he says, she would cruise to victory. And yes, maybe some Biden policies are a little bit unpopular, but that's because they're being implemented by a doddering old fool. But if they were implemented by a young-ish, charismatic female president, well, maybe that would generate more energy into them. What do you think about what Paul says?
I'm no more optimistic than Paul on this one, unfortunately. I think he's largely right. To the first issue, I wrote an article that kind of made similar points here a little while back called Conservatism is Dead, Build Something New. And the point was that conservatives operate from this position of, we are the majority. Our values are the ones that America is built on. Our values are the ones that are held by the majority of people. They're the ones in the institutions, and we just need to conserve them. We just need to go back to honoring them, just need to defend them. But that's not the case. The mass majority of American institutions, even ones that used to be wildly conservative, like the American military, are now completely woke. And so these things are simply no longer the mainstream. That's a really difficult thing to think about. It's a very difficult thing to hear, but it is the truth. Now, the good news is that a lot of these positions are held by our enemies simply because they confer power. So I don't think a lot of people are actually completely sold on transgenderism or some of this other stuff, though a lot of them are. There are certainly true believers, But their faith could easily be shaken if they were no longer collecting the benefits of holding that position, if their position was no longer the same position as Apple and Google and Citibank and the federal government, and every position of power wasn't preaching this stuff. I don't know that it would last that long. So as someone who's a believer in elite theory, who thinks that it's really kind of the ruling elites and the institutions they operate rather than the opinions of the mass people, I think the good news here is that you could probably move that needle pretty easily if you could switch over who was in control of the institutions and who was leading that stuff. But I think it is important for a lot of people on the right to understand that the Biden agenda is actually somewhat popular with the people, because they are told at every waking moment that this is the only thing that matters, that this kind of identity politics, that this form of gender ideology is the most important thing happening right now. You know, Biden talking about how white supremacy is the greatest threat to America. This kind of stuff, it seems ridiculous to us, but it is what the halls of power are echoing in the ear of every American citizen over and over again. The good news is, again, that could be easily changed. But I think Paul is also right about Michelle Obama being that secret weapon in the back pocket of the left. Right now, it doesn't look like they have a lot of really impressive people. Okay, Gavin Newsom is maybe on the chart, but he's a pretty face, I guess, that has a little bit of a aristocratic bearing, but does not have anything of substance, does not really command any great respect. Someone like AOC is, again, an Instagram star. It works in a moment, but it's not really something of substance. But Michelle Obama has stayed relatively clean in the idea of most people. And I think she is a very serious contender the Democrats can pull out of their pocket when they need to.
Hey, folks, with Father's Day coming up, I got a message for you from Omaha Steaks. On Father's Day, your father and a bunch of other fathers are going to compare notes, and they're going to say, what did you get for Father's Day? And one of them will say, oh, I got a number one dad t-shirt. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. That's very, very sweet and nice. But he has 10 of them from the 10 previous Father's Days. Why don't you get him a countercultural, awesome gift that he secretly wants and that will make him the envy of all the other dads? Your father or father-in-law or whoever is going to say, I got a hand-selected package from Omaha Steaks. You go over to omahasteaks.com, use promo code Woods at checkout, you get $30 off your qualifying order. These packages can include bacon-wrapped filet mignons, air-chilled boneless chicken breasts, burgers, jumbo franks, many more favorites. I've been eating them myself because Omaha Steaks sent me an amazing package just like the kind that you can make for your own dad. And it's delicious as always. I've been ordering Omaha Steaks since maybe 2010. It's super convenient, top quality, and a great value. Well, whether he's your father, father-in-law, or father figure, he's the guy who was always ready to step up when you needed him most. This Father's Day, show him the love with the only gift that's as unforgettable as he is, the mouth-watering perfection of Omaha Steaks. From perfectly aged, oh-so-tender steaks to hand-selected gift packages, Omaha Steaks makes it easy to give Dad what he really wants. Order today and get $30 off with promo code WOODS. And every purchase is backed by their unconditional money-back guarantee. That's omahasteaks.com. Promo code WOODS. Minimum order may be required. See site for details. Let's shift gears a bit. What is your impression of RFK Jr.?
That's a good question. I have to say I've not followed everything he has said as closely as others. I've seen many people who are impressed by his willingness to attack the pharmaceutical industrial complex, willing to attack the way that government pushed this on everybody. Obviously, this is the stuff that really has a lot of conservatives. There are people on the right keeping an eye on him. Obviously, he is inherently questioning of the security state apparatus for very understandable reasons, given his family's history. And so all of these are positive things. Now, at the end of the day, this guy is still a progressive. He still is a leftist in most of his values. And so I'm always a little worried. I'm not saying there aren't people on the left that couldn't be won over or that you can't work with on certain things. But when people are truly committed progressives, I'm always worried about the attempt to work with them, because these people don't hold your values and they'll backstab you as soon as they get the opportunity. Again, I don't have a great read on him just because I haven't paid as close attention to him as others. But I do think his entrance into the campaign is interesting because obviously he is more impressive than Biden. It's hard not to be. And the fact that the Democrats are very clearly going to make it pretty much impossible for him to be a real challenger to what is a very deeply unpopular incumbent president really gives the lie to the idea that democracy is actually what's functioning in the United States.
Do you have any strong opinions about anybody who's declared for the GOP nomination other than Trump and DeSantis?
I mean, pretty strongly negative. The Nikki Haley candidacy is a joke. The DEI conservatism of, oh, everybody's worried about a real immigrant woman. You know, that's the conservative message. That's the Republican message coming out of the party is that she's going to step in. I can't imagine that it's anything but consultants propping that campaign up and feeding that delusion that that's going to go anywhere. People understand she can fundraise enough money off Chamber of Commerce connections to pay them, but I don't think anyone thinks that's really going anywhere. There's also, of course, Tim Scott, and Tim Scott's really squishing out a lot of stuff. Apparently, he's a really nice guy. I've heard good things about him as a person, but I don't really see him. I guess the ideal scenario for these other candidates is that Trump and DeSantis explode each other, right? That's kind of the best case scenario. These people, I mean, Trump leads the entire pack by a lot, even DeSantis by a lot, and then DeSantis clearly leads the rest of the pack by a good bit as well. So it's really, you would need these two titans to crash into each other and take each other out for these other candidates to make an impact. Of course, it could be that both of them are actually running for vice president, which obviously Trump is not going to pick up Pence again. So he would need someone new. DeSantis likewise does not yet have a VP candidate lined up as far as I'm aware. Both of these candidates, as sad as it is to say, do check certain diversity boxes that the Republican Party is going to want to check when they set up a ticket. And so where it very well could be that neither of these candidates is entering the race as someone who's expecting to come out first place, but certainly wouldn't mind gaining some notoriety, raising some money, and ending up as a VP on a ticket.
When Trump chose Pence, and we don't really know what went on behind closed doors on that, whether it was kind of forced on him or whether through his own judgment he thought, I need to allay the concerns of the establishment of the party because they still run the show. I don't know. I don't know if anybody can really know. But now that the establishment of the party is in complete disarray, and as you say, there is no prospect of a Mitt Romney, there's no prospect of a Jeb Bush, the Trump people seem to be more in the driver's seat. So maybe he's in a position to make a choice more to his liking. But even so, he still has to have political considerations. It can't just be, I pick somebody because I like him and he holds all the opinions I have. It also has to bear in mind, I need to think about the state the person is from. Maybe it's a state I need to win. Maybe Glenn Youngkin from Virginia makes purplish Virginia more in play for me, something like that. Do you have any sense of what the likely, at least what the short list might look like?
Well, that's interesting that you bring up Glenn Youngkin, because whether it's Youngkin or DeSantis, you'll notice that I think Chris Rufo is a key factor in both of those rises. DeSantis was already kind of doing some positive things on his own, but Rufo has been a big part of helping to construct a lot of what DeSantis is doing, particularly in educational policy and the banning of things like transgender surgeries on minors and gender ideology in schools. Again, Youngkin was also somebody who benefited significantly by Rufo's activism when it came to education and that kind of thing. And so it could be in some ways that we've got a little bit of a kingmaker happening inside the Republican Party. You don't have a lot of very competent activists inside the Republican Party at this point. And so I think there is a lot of people casting about for who's going to get this kind of stuff done. I think it's pretty clear that I've heard that the Heritage Institute and some of these places are getting better, but they don't have a great track record here in the near past. And so I think people are going to be looking for those who are able to build an architecture that's going to advance some of these projects. Obviously, DeSantis has already proven an ability to do that, and that's kind of his main selling point. But I'm sure having a VP who's also capable of that would not be a bad thing. I don't know that that's really going to matter at the moment. I don't think that VP picks are going to be a big issue that's going to swing the primary. I think this is going to really be a raw showdown between Trump and DeSantis. Competence versus charisma is going to be kind of the playing field. Of course, all of this could change dramatically if Trump, the indictments against Trump or other things that are being brought against Trump impact his ability to run or conduct a campaign. We're still very far away from an election. And so all of that could be thrown up in the air at a moment's notice.
All right. Well, bearing that in mind, are there ways in which you could say that Trump is stronger in 2024 than he was in 2016? And what I mean by that is, or the reason I bring that up is, I can imagine how some people, myself included, might think he is weaker in that, yes, he rallied his, even if he gets convicted in a court, that just rallies his base to think, boy, they really, really are engaged in a witch hunt against him. But is that the way independent voters look at it would be the question. And likewise, what has he done in the interim to build up his following beyond his initial base rather than alienate more people? I'm not entirely sure that that's happened. So I think he could be in a weaker position. But on the other hand, he's up against a really, really unimpressive president. And as Dan McCarthy said on my show recently, elections are comparative things. Maybe you're not the world's biggest Trump fan, but you sure don't like this guy. And so maybe he's got that going for him. What do you think?
I think it's hard for Trump to be anything but weaker due to the many reasons you just kind of listed there. I mean, Trump came onto the scene with the promise of deep change, transformation, saying things that no Republican candidate said, speaking to audiences that no one else would, and in a way that really drove the base out. Now, obviously, there's still a very large and powerful base of loyal followers to Trump. And that's why he's just towering above everybody else in the primary. And I don't see a lot of them abandoning him for DeSantis unless he really mucks up in a way that he hasn't yet, which I'm not really sure what he could do at this point to kind of drive them away. So he's always going to have that really powerful install base. But I do think he's wounded in a lot of ways. He kind of led his followers to the edge of something and it didn't happen. And he obviously has an establishment in the Republican Party that wants no part in him. Even, I guess you could say, like the new right, the insurgent establishment, those who are not the Bill Kristols, not the Never Trumper type guys, but who edged in at the end when they was clear like Trump was the only option and went along for a little while. But now they're like, okay, I'm done with this. This guy's an embarrassment. We have to do something else. And they're going to push back hard against him. They're going to kind of do everything they can to work against him. But like you said, his strength would be the comparison. And the fact is that it is just a fundamentally different election from everybody hates Trump. The media hates Trump. He's the worst person to ever exist. And so we can just literally run this blank cipher of a candidate who never comes out of his basement during COVID and he can win, as opposed to, okay, now we've actually seen a Biden presidential term. We know what that looks like. We know how awful it is. Do you really want to continue with this? I think that it's still a difficult climb for Trump in that scenario, but it is, I think, a better situation than it was before, just because Biden is now not just a not Trump. He is an actual president with an actual track record and nothing about it is good.
Right, exactly. I think Biden was, in a way, an abstraction almost in 2020. He represented the restoration of dignity to the presidential office and respect for the office of the president and the person of the president. I think that's what he was more than anything. And maybe this grandfatherly figure who's been around forever, who's going to restore stability. And the exact opposite has happened. I mean, as almost anybody has to admit, this has not been what anybody would have wanted to see. So I don't know. I'm not going to make you predict. Maybe you thought that's where this was all heading. I'm going to make you predict what's going to happen. I hate that because there's so many variables. They haven't even started. We haven't even had DeSantis hasn't even thrown his hat into the ring yet. So I'm not going to ask for a prediction. But wrapping up, though, can you at least describe what your gut is telling you about possible outcomes?
I guess
that's kind of like a prediction.
Sure. Yeah. I'll say this. There's a lot, again, like we said, there's a lot of distance between here and there. Joe Biden is not in the best health. Who even knows if he'll be physically able to run by the time this election turns around? Same with Donald Trump. Like the people we're talking about are so old that it's really difficult to even predict if they're going to be in the Shape 2 campaign in this scenario. And so casting into the future about kind of where they're going to be, my impulse would be Donald Trump wins the nomination and then loses to Biden again because the media and the Democratic apparatus have fundamentally changed the voting system in a way that makes it impossible for someone like Donald Trump to win again. I mean, the Biden administration is basically airlifting half the population of the world into the United States to make sure the Republicans can't ever actually achieve power. I think that's a really big problem as compared to like the merits of any individual candidate. Our entire voting system has been altered from the ground up, and that changes things in a far more significant way than like figuring out like which state the next VP is going to be from. So I think if anyone's going to focus on things, it really should be reforming this stuff. Yeah, I had Curtis Yarvin on my show a while back, and he said DeSantis blew away everybody when there was supposed to be this red wave, and it didn't show up anywhere. The one place it did show up in was Florida. Now, Ron DeSantis is popular, yes, but is he like 15 points more popular than anyone else in the entire nation? His fans might say maybe, but probably not. What made the difference in Florida? Ron DeSantis reformed voting in Florida. He got rid of most of these left-wing voting arrangements that are dominating now the rest of the country. And while the rest of the Republican Party argues on Twitter about who's more mature while spitting in each other's faces between Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis, the left is like actually securing power by manipulating the electoral system. I think that stuff is way more important than trying to figure out the personality of the next VP. And I think that's got to be the stuff that people focus on.
Well, excellent points. As I say, I'm going to put links to your Substack and all the stuff you're doing at tomwoods.com/2337. But is there an easy link you can give people right now verbally?
Sure. I have, you can find it on my Twitter there, but I have the findmyfriends.net/Orrin McIntyre. It's like a link tree that just gives you everything. It's got my podcasts and YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey, Twitter, Substack, all that stuff is right there.
We're talking AURON and then MACINTYRE. So that's the full name. I'll also put that up. In fact, I'll just jot down that link you just said. Put that up also at tomwoods.com/2337. Well, thank you very much for the chat, and we will just wait and see how it all unfolds. Thanks again.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.